Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Today at noon, you can join me on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, for a live chat on the Libya intervention. We'll try to answer some of your basic questions about the diplomatic and military strategy behind the enforcement of a no-fly zone and the rest of it with Elizabeth Dickinson, an editor at Foreign Policy magazine. She will be joining us for a live chat at noon today at itsafreecountry.org. Hope to see you there. I'll remind you again before the end of the program, or just write it down. Live chat on Libya, itsafreecountry.org, with me and Elizabeth Dickinson from Foreign Policy at noon today. With me now, Democratic Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn and Republican Senator John Flanagan of Long Island. We'll talk about the new version of the millionaire's tax being proposed in the Assembly and some other things, too, like developments on affordable housing and Flanagan's bill to ban salvia. That's Hannah Montana's hallucinogen of choice, but that may have caused at least one teen suicide on Roosevelt Island. Senator, Assemblyman, welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
Morning, Brian. Thank you.
Good morning.
Senator, you landed basically a whole page of the Daily News today with your salvia ban passing the Senate. Want to tell people who never heard of this drug what it is?
Yes, it is very similar, if not identical, to marijuana. The difference is that it's legal. It's a hallucinogen that has got the same general qualities. It comes from Mexico in particular. What we're trying to do is raise awareness. We're banning the sale, providing a civil penalty of up to $500. And I look at this as an opportunity for government to be proactive rather than reactive. And I think statistically and factually, it's very clear that people who start with low-level type drugs generally get into things that are much more dangerous, much more expensive, and certainly far more illegal. So whether it's Hannah Montana or the tragedy of the young man in Roosevelt Island who leapt to his death just a couple of weeks ago, we think it's time that this be banned. Several states have done it, several countries have done it, and the federal government is looking at it and trying to figure out what they should be doing, if they should be regulating it in a lot more detail.
Assemblyman, the Daily News says the fate of this bill in the Assembly is uncertain, that you all might only want it banned for minors. What can you tell us?
Well, I certainly think that there is significant support for dealing with the issue. We want to make sure that we prevent the type of tragedies that we've seen already occur here in New York State and perhaps in other states across the country. We want to make sure we do it in a responsible fashion, but this is an important piece of legislation that the senator has advanced, and I think it will receive strong consideration in the Assembly. We'll be able to find common ground and ultimately arrive at a resolution that makes the people of New York State a lot safer.
Just one other thing on this before we move on to other issues, Senator. The Daily News had one of their reporters toke up through a very colorful, hippie-looking hash pipe, as photographed in the paper today, and he reported that the salvia didn't do much to him. If it's not much of a high, and you say it comes from Mexico, will Mexican drug gangs be going to war over the salvia dollar once we exile it to the black market?
Well, I certainly hope not. I did see the profile in the paper today, but I would also respectfully suggest that this is the case where everybody can have a different effect. There was a woman who speaks about her son in Delaware who died in 2006 who swears that the use of salvia is exactly what created her son's death. The young man in Roosevelt Island, you know, seemingly had no problems, and it was at least appears to be a direct result of his having taken this hallucinogen. And I don't know that it would affect every person the same way, but I'd rather err on the side of caution.
Assemblyman Jeffries, changing topics. You and I have talked on this show about your efforts to have failed luxury condos in the city, new developments that never got completed or never got sold because of the housing bust, converted to affordable housing. And I see in the Times today that it has finally happened with one development at 382 Lefferts Avenue in the Prospect Lefferts Gardens area. The developer is the first to join the city program. It took all this time, and what was going to be 26 condos will now be completed as 46 affordable rentals for people making less than $79,000 a year. Is that an important step?
It's certainly an important step in the right direction. We have to be able to deal with the affordability crisis that we're facing in New York City, where working families and middle-class folks and senior citizens are being pushed out of the city of New York by the skyrocketing cost of living and the unaffordability of significant parts of the housing stock. And so, Brian, we're going to have to both preserve the affordable...
Whoops. Did we lose Senator Flanagan? Senator, are you there? I guess so. We're going to have to get him back. But Assemblyman Jeffries, you are there, right?
Okay, I'm here.
Go ahead. You can finish your answer.
So, Brian, we'll both have to preserve the affordable housing that we have, you know, in the form of renewing and strengthening rent control and rent regulation, but also identify new creative sources of affordable housing, such as the conversion of failed luxury condominiums into affordable homes and apartments for the people in the city of New York who need them the most. And so the hope is that the participation in the city's program, along with steps that we've taken in the state to set forth similar models of conversion will be viewed by the development community as something that can be a win-win for projects that otherwise were failing and don't have any reasonable likelihood of resuscitation, given that the housing market continues to struggle in many parts of the city.
Now, I understand, and Senator Flanagan's back with us. Oh, not with us yet. Okay. I understand, though, that the budget bill, as we moved to discuss the budget bill, and we'll get to the millionaire's tax and maybe prisons and education cuts, but it might also include rent stabilization law changes, like repealing vacancy decontrol, where landlords can convert rent-stabilized apartments to market rates when the stabilized tenants move out. Let's listen to Governor Cuomo saying he hopes that's the case.
The rent issue and the property tax cap. My position is I would like to see them done in the budget. If they're not done in the budget, can you do them after the budget? Certainly you could. My preference would be to see them done in the budget.
So, Assemblyman Jeffries, you want to see that in the budget too, I presume.
Well, certainly. You know, hundreds of thousands of families face the prospect of the expiration of the rent stabilization laws on June 15th of this year, which could result in them experiencing rent increases that are double, triple, or quadruple what they currently pay. It would be a catastrophe for working families and for middle-class New Yorkers if we allow the laws to expire or even to exist in their current weakened form. Given the uncertainty that is hanging over more than a million New Yorkers, a significant part of the fabric of our city, it seems to me reasonable and responsible for us to try and resolve this issue sooner rather than later. The vehicle for doing that now is in the context of the budget. Mm-hmm. We have the support of the governor in that regard. The Assembly Democratic majority with the leadership of Speaker Silver has been out in front on this issue for several months. And the hope is we can provide some measure of certainty and stability for significant parts of the city of New York residents who are residing in rent-stabilized homes and otherwise may be forced to leave the city if these laws were changed or further weakened.
Democratic State Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn, along with Republican State Senator John Flanagan of Long Island. Senator, you're back with us, right?
Yes, I am. I apologize.
And I apologize. I don't know where the phone problem came from. Is the Senate going to go along with this? I remember 1997 when there was really a war over the rent stabilization laws in the state legislature, and it dragged on and dragged on, and then there was finally the compromise that resulted in the vacancy decontrol that we have now, which was supposed to be more or less a luxury decontrol if a tenant was making a whole lot of money and the value of the apartment was pretty high. And then it turned into this larger vacancy decontrol where after any tenant moved out, a landlord could renovate the apartment to a certain level and then turn it into market rates, especially in some of the better neighborhoods. And so now I guess the Democrats want vacancy decontrol repealed. Is the Senate going to go along with this, Senator?
I think the most important thing to focus on right now is the timeliness of the state budget. That is April 1st. The governor has made it clear. I know Senator Skelos has made it clear as well that April 1st is a real deadline, and frankly, there's no reason in the world why we can't and should not meet that date. My concern is that as other issues get included in the budget, that has the potential to slow down the timeliness of the budget. rent regulation or vacancy decontrol or whatever may be relating to those issues. It is a serious issue. It's something that's worthy of our consideration. I am probably one of the people that doesn't believe that it should be included in the budget. And frankly, right now, I don't think the property tax cap should be included in there either, because the governor was all for the property tax cap in January and then seemed to fall off the radar. And now it comes into play in the last 2 weeks before the budget. I'm going to give you a perfect example. First of all, I don't think rent regulations and the property tax cap should be tied together at all. They are separate and distinct and very important issues, no matter what community you live in. The more important component for me and for many of my colleagues is that whether it's in the budget or out of the budget, there is no mandate relief whatsoever. The governor's task force that came up with an 87-page report really, in my opinion, didn't offer anything of genuine substance. We've taken very strong positions in the Senate that if we're going to have a property tax cap, that there has to be meaningful, substantive, effective, and immediate mandate relief.
In other words, without the mandate relief and a property tax cap, communities like yours on Long Island may be restricted from taxing your residents enough to pay the bills of the local areas, the schools, the police, whatever, but not given the tools like certain pension changes and things like that to do it in an affordable way.
Yes, it's certainly not a one-dimensional approach. Assemblyman Jeffries is cognizant of that as well. His sincerity on the housing issue and on rent regulations is real and something that we have to focus on, even though we come from different areas of the state. Mm-hmm. I just think the timing of it is something that doesn't have to be included in the April 1st deadline, because the budget, in many respects, should be about the fiscal policies and priorities of the state of New York.
All right. Let me get to this new version of the millionaire's tax, which I guess, Senator, would only be for people actually making $1 million. The old surcharge, which expired, was on people making $200,000, I believe, as an individual, $300,000 a year as a couple. But now Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver says, look, we still need more revenue. We're going to make cuts to Medicaid and to schools. Everybody's got to have shared sacrifice, the wealthy too. But we understand that $300,000 in New York City can be middle class. So this millionaire's tax is only going to be on the millionaires. Are you buying it?
No, I'm not. In fact, I listened to this segment before we came on, and almost every person, I think every person, said the most important thing to focus on is jobs.
Right.
Tax is job spending. We spend too much, we tax too much. Even with everything that's going on, the budget is going to be up approximately 2% over last year. Most of the public doesn't even have a clue that that's what we're dealing with. Commensurate with that, if you look at what the Assembly had advocated, and I respect their position even though I disagree with it, they did call for a true millionaire's tax. But in our budget, we put about $280 million back into education, and even though they add $700 million in the Assembly budget for a millionaire's tax, they put $200 million into education. So there was no direct correlation there between extra revenue and more benefits or more largesse for school districts. You know, it's to me, if you look at the folks who are in that category, and most of us would certainly like to be in that category, they pay a whopping disproportionate percentage of the taxes right now. So I think New Yorkers generally are overtaxed. And the governor has made it clear, Senator Skelos has made it clear, that we're going to try and craft a budget that turns New York State around, and that's going to be getting out of the spiral of ever-increasing taxes and fees. And certainly, we're speaking on March 22nd, I don't see any movement where we would end up with a millionaire's tax.
So, Assemblyman Jeffries, would it kill jobs?
Well, it certainly wouldn't kill jobs. And a few things about what the Assembly did in our budget resolution. First, in extending the millionaire's tax on individuals making $1 million or more in the state of New York, we actually are able to restore approximately $467 million in education aid. That's $364 million in the fiscal year that we're entering into, as well as $200 million as a subset of that for general support for public schools, which is perhaps where Senator Flanagan gets the $200 million number. But overall, it's $467 million. We're also able to restore funding for summer youth employment programs, restore funding for the senior centers. Mayor Bloomberg is threatening to close approximately 105 in the city of New York, restore $34 million in funding for the EPIC pharmaceutical program for senior citizens, which serves approximately 300,000 seniors. What we're essentially saying is that we are in the midst of a very difficult fiscal crisis, And we do have to move forward with a responsible and a reasonable budget, but it needs to be fair and equitable, and we cannot balance the budget simply on the backs of school children, senior citizens, working families, and the middle class when we're in a fiscal crisis right now that was caused in large measure by the reckless behavior of a few folks on Wall Street and others largely in the financial sector.
We're just about out of time, and obviously we're not going to settle it today, but listeners, those are the parameters of the debate that they are having in Albany now over the new version of the millionaire's tax and some of the other things that we've touched on. I'm just curious if you agree on the numbers with respect to the tax. We have a $10 billion deficit that needs to be closed by April 1st for the new fiscal year. How much of that, Assemblyman, would the millionaire's tax in that proposed form raise if it's passed? Do you have
Right. As proposed, it's projected to provide an additional $706 million in this current fiscal year.
That's all less than $1 billion out of the $10 billion deficit. So it wouldn't make that much. There would still have to be massive cuts.
Well, there was still going to be significant cuts, and that's part of the point, that we are moving forward with a responsible budget that does have significant cuts. We are trying to live within our means, but we need to have a progressive income tax structure in New York State. If we allow the millionaire's tax to lapse, essentially a single individual making $20,000, a family of four making $40,000, would pay the same income tax rate as individuals making $1 million, right, $5 million, or $100 million. That's not fair in the state of New York.
Senator, you get the last word. Do you agree on how much money it would raise?
Yes, but it's $700 million in new taxes, and I think we have to step away from that and figure out how are we going to create jobs in the state of New York, and I don't think raising taxes is the key to doing that.
Senator John Flanagan from Long Island, Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries from Brooklyn, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. And coming up next, how to get your child that rarest of New York City commodities, a seat in a public pre-K. Stay tuned.